Thank you everyone for coming. Our next speaker is Yaakov Trump. He associate rabbi Young Israel Lawrence Cedarhurst, involved with many community organizations, Shabbos Project in Five Towns, Five Towns Awareness Program, and teaches at the Shalmouth High School. He's originally from South Africa. And learned in NYU, and I'll keep the bio short so he has more time for us.
Oh, wait, are we going to the next thing now?
Yeah.
Oh, we need to wait because the computer, we're not ready to film yet.
Are you filming it? Okay.
We need like another 5 minutes.
Filming
it?
Really?
Well, we're going to film it, but
okay.
The camera has to still
do stand up.
I'll do the pause, which never come, and we never get to the end. Okay. So while we're waiting, just I'll take an opportunity. Should I wait for the thank yous till later? I'll do the thank yous later in the video. Okay. So let me just throw out a. About something which is worth thinking about. So I was actually just giving a shiur on the topic of divine values. They're completely different to what we're about to address now. And there was a particular case, a court case, which arose in the late 40s in Israel about the following episode, where there was a fellow who was found caught smuggling drugs from Egypt into the newly established state of Israel. He was brought to court, and he claimed that he was impervious to the law because the law of Israel only prohibited importing drugs via air or sea, but not by land. And they looked on the books, and in fact that was the case, because Israel wholesale copied a lot of its constitutional law from England. And England has this issue that there is no overland passage from another country. So they had automatically copied the same text over from England, established it in Israel, and this is the first loophole which was found in the drug smuggling business. Fascinating case. The reason why this is a fascinating case is because this is another good example of where you see where we'll call the letter of the law and what the law is supposed to generate and supposed to bring out in people. We all know and we all appreciate that the system of law was not to allow smuggling. But nonetheless this individual was doing it. So where does that fall? Does Judaism have, we'll call it, an extrajudicial system? Is there a system which is beyond necessarily the 613, we'll call it, categories of law? Is there such a thing? That's a question which I was exploring a little earlier. This is not the shir yet. We're just waiting for the video to start. So I'm just throwing out an interesting question as to where does Judaism have space for, we'll call it, meta-legal system? Is there something beyond necessarily what you see, what you experience, just on the books itself? So, in that regard, it happens to be, there's just a few places to look. If the Torah is not telling us as a mitzvah, it's not telling us as a command, is there a space to say that there is a value? So does Judaism promote a value system beyond a legal system? That's the question. We all know the people. We're all very intimately familiar with people who live a legal life. So I'll give you an example. When it comes to the marketing world, you'll let me know when we're set, okay? So when it comes to media, you speak to somebody who's involved in media. They use terrible things. They do pretty terrible things to be able to engage our teens and preteens. There's specific marketing targeted to our kids' phones, specific marketing targeted just to them. So they're seeing things we're not going to see. They know who's on, when, what device, and how to advertise. They bring them in a way which we as parents or grandparents may not be comfortable with. So you ask, let's say, an average person who's working in media, and you say, you know, a person who's creating these algorithms, who's buying information from China, which is being crunched up and used to be able to pull in our preteens. You say to them, well, aren't you a moral, aren't you a person with scruples? The person says, the code words in operation are not moral, immoral, the words in operation are legal, illegal. And if you believe it, if you deem it to be immoral, you should make it illegal. That's the way it should work. Meaning to say, if you, the population, feel that this is an immoral, this is an immoral law, change the law. If you don't, you're ultimately telling me that because it's legal, it is moral. So don't blame me, blame you. That's the response that's given. So that's the question. So does Judaism have a value system beyond the legal system? So the one place to look for this is, just before we start, because we're losing our vaccination time here, I'm afraid. One place to look for this is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu talks about where he describes, he's talking about child sacrifice. And Yirmiyahu says to Bnei Israel, I don't appreciate, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the mouthpiece of Yirmiyahu says, I don't appreciate these child sacrifices. I didn't command them, I didn't talk about them, and I didn't even imagine them. Which ultimately becomes, we'll call it, three silos of understanding of how Judaism works. There's the things Hashem says explicitly, I want you to do certain things. But then there's the things Hashem talks about. Instead of prescribing, he describes. So we look at certain individuals in Tanakh, and we say, what does the Tanakh tell us about them? We can learn the values rather than the laws. And finally, the third silo is what's called Loy Olsa Alibi, I didn't imagine. What does it mean Hashem didn't imagine? This is what's called, we'll call it inductive Judaism, inductive values, where it's not necessarily that the Torah tells you, for instance, environmentalism. Does the Torah tell us to protect the environment? Well, not exactly, but the Torah tells us a few mitzvahs, which if put together, we can induce from them a rule, we can induce a sensitivity or a value which is underlying those particular ideas and sequences. So if we had a little more time, what we could do is we could take examples of prescriptive, descriptive, and inductive values as understood in the Torah. Can we look at the Torah and see that there are what we'll call bigger pictures, bigger picture values rather than just laws? Are there descriptive values? That's why we have Sefer Bereishis, right? There's no mitzvahs in Sefer Bereishis. It's just descriptive values. And then inductive values, environmentalism, how we treat animals, property damage. Does the Torah tell us not to damage property? Never. You're not allowed to steal property. The Torah never tells us not to damage property. Interesting. The Torah tells us what to do once we've damaged it. So where's the... Right, I'm just carrying over land, I'm just smuggling over land, right? Our point is that there's obviously values embedded in that. So this is some of the background for a much longer discussion. You good to go?
Almost. Okay.
Okay, great. So as not to waste any time, so just a thoughtful conversation is, what's the value system of the Torah as opposed to necessarily just the legal system of the Torah? Are we leading a value system of Torahs or a Torah lifestyle, or are we simply following the letter of the law? That's one of the questions that we have to think about. Anyways, let's see. Morning, Margaret. We have such light. Does everybody have a source sheet while we're at it? Because I know we're starting just a few minutes, so I don't want to lose any time. If there aren't, there's just the back table over here, then we could help hang out. Thank you so much. Attention is killing me. Okay. Yeah. While we're waiting, special mazel tov to the Novaks, who became new grandparents this morning. Hashem, see you on the East Coast for the continuous slach. Should we be shout out? I just got a call from Jutz Novak on Friday, just arranging an APAC event. He says, I'll email you on Sunday. I will see him, Mr. Sharon. Okay, great. So welcome everybody. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for taking the time this morning to be here. And I want to just start off by thanking the OU for organizing this, for really cross-pollinating, that the Torah across the country goes in both directions. A special thank you to Moshe Bain, the president of the OU, whose brainchild this is to continue the idea of the Torah in the City, which was done in New York, the Torah in the City in LA, and of course Rabbi Kalinsky, who's been arranging this convention for many, many years now. This is the 28th, I think, convention that we have right now. And to all the individuals here who've been involved in running this event in the many years, the lay leadership, to the clients, to Jackie, to making sure this is working this morning, to leadership on the ground, really making this possible. We have a very short amount of time, and a special mention to the Lehmans, who are our members, who are now on the West Coast and the East Coast simultaneously at all times. It is a true privilege to be able to have this opportunity to learn together. So, let's try to take advantage. We have a very short amount of time for an incredibly large topic. But let's talk about the topic of vaccination. Now, I want to start off by saying, I'm not a doctor. In fact, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not a post-sec. So what is my role in this next little bit? And that is perhaps to give a little bit of a survey, to do a little bit of a conversational, to have a conversational awareness of some of the factors which are necessary to consider in this particular topic. It is perhaps maybe less on the West Coast, but on the East Coast is a very hot topic. We'll go through a report which was released 4 days ago by the New York State Department of Health, and just appreciate the difficulty that we're going through right now on this particular topic. I feel like this is really preaching to the choir, but it's necessary at the same time because the stakes are so high when it comes to this to be able to discuss this in an intelligent fashion. So let's start at the very beginning. First of all, the history is fascinating. History is absolutely fascinating, and I want to just note that three weeks ago I did a share like this in our shul, but because it was a different forum, the way I did it was with I had one of the lawyers in our shul who is the legal counsel for 6 day schools, and a pediatrician who's been in practice in the neighborhood for 30 years, and an immunologist who's done 50 years of research, and then we had a conversation together. So that was the way we did it. So obviously in the short amount of time that we have, that's not possible right now, but I'm going to try to give a little of the background from that perspective. And obviously there's professionals in this room who can speak to many of the details. But let's start at the very beginning, just a history. The history of vaccinations in Halacha goes back well over 200 years, because we go back to the time of smallpox. We don't know so much about smallpox today, which is a blessing, but just to appreciate the impact smallpox had on humanity. Smallpox is the disease which killed the most amount of humans in all of human history. That means to say that in the 20th century alone, there was an estimated 300 million people killed in Europe. 300 million. That's almost the amount of people in America today were killed by smallpox. At its height, it was killing 400,000 people a year. Just to appreciate the numbers that we're dealing with. And at the time when it was raging through Europe in the 1700s, going into the 1800s, there were certain practices which were being used. So one example is, as described here, if you take a look in source one, there was what was called variolation, which was a process developed in the second paragraph of the 10th century in China and India. And what it would do is it would take some of the fluid out of a pock and inject it into a person who's not yet contracted the disease, thereby creating a lifelong immunity. And this was actually practiced. This was before the natural vaccine was developed. The problem was that they came with a risk factor. The risk factor was between 0.5 and 2% of people actually contracted the severe disease. And in fact, another problem was they were still contagious even when they got the minor symptoms. But nonetheless, it still saved lives. And there was a question: is should I put myself into a dangerous situation where I, by taking this, we'll call it this shot with the actual disease, and putting myself in a 0.5 to 2% means 1 in 50 or 1 in 200 chance of dying. But the chances or the statistics of when contracting smallpox of dying is 30%. Understand, right? So 1 in 3 people who contracted smallpox die. But should I take the risk of a 0.5 to 2% chance of this rudimentary vaccine. Ultimately, in the 1790s, as we famously know, Dr. Edward Jenner was perhaps one of the greatest medical revolutions in all of human history, invented the vaccine of smallpox, which he did by using and experimenting with other forms, other strains of the disease, using ultimately a bovine, a cow strain of the disease, using it and putting it into people. It still came with its risks, but nonetheless diminished it much more than the earlier techniques. He first started this in the year 1796, and thereafterwards, thank God, was able to quell a lot of the disease. He had a dream, interestingly enough, about being able to change the world. He dreamed of a world free of smallpox. Unfortunately, as humans are wont, humans only generally put out fires. They don't deal with leadership. They deal with traumas and stopping traumas. And so it really took until the 1950s and 1960s for his dream to actually take place, where the World Health Organization established a task force which actually went around the world to try to eradicate smallpox. There were numerous outbreaks. In the 1940s, an outbreak in New York City where they had to mass vaccinate 6 million people because of the outbreak in smallpox. In the 1912s, there was another outbreak in various countries. So in the 1950s and 60s, a task force went around the world. There was a famous case in Kosovo because somebody went as a pilgrim down to, I think it was to Mecca, and came brought back the virus. It's an airborne virus, extremely contagious. They quarantined literally cities and vaccinated across the board until the smallpox itself was eradicated in its natural form. There are only two samples of naturally occurring smallpox that are existent in the world today, and that we are aware of, and they are kept for research purposes in Russia, and I believe in one of the universities in Maryland, where it is kept for research purposes. There was actually a sell-by date. It was meant to be that those diseases were meant to be eradicated, were to be destroyed, I think, in the 90s, and they kept pushing that off because of further research. But when you hear things on the news talking about, and when you hear about sci-fis exploring diseases and terrible weapons, those are very dangerous things, the fact that we still have two samples in existence. Nonetheless, this is the history of smallpox itself. So how did the Jewish community relate to that? So we actually happen to have some very fascinating insights as to how the Jewish community related. One example is by a leader at the time whose name is Rabbi Israel Lipschitz. Israel Lipschitz wrote a famed commentary on the Mishnah called Tiferes Israel. He has two sections to his commentary called the Yachin and Boaz. Yachin and Boaz were actually the names of, anybody familiar? Yachin and Boaz were the names of the two pillars as you enter the Beis HaMikdash, the first temple. So as you came in, one was called Yachin, one was called Boaz, and he wrote his commentary as sort of these two, almost symbolic pillars of Torah on the Mishnah. In the end of Maseches Yuma, there are a lot of very fascinating medical cases that are extracted from these Mishnahs, where it talks about trying to save people's lives on Shabbos. To what extent do we desecrate Shabbos in order to save people's lives? How much do we need to know they're alive? What level of doubt do we need to have? That's what the Mishnahs are talking about. That embedded in this pirush, there the Tiferes Yisrael. By the way, this is really an advertisement for anybody who is looking to learn Mishnahs and wants to have a fascinating, a mind-expanding experience of understanding Mishnah. Really learn the Tiferes Yisrael. It's underrated. Most people don't do it. He was a person who was clearly engaged in the world in a very real way. At the same time as being a tremendous Talmud Chacham, you get such vistas into his world when learning him. So he has an example. This is in his Pirush called the Boaz in Source 3, on the top page 2. He says the following: Mizeh Mirelih Leheter La'asois. What's that next word? If anybody's taking a look over here, in the Rashi script. Mizeh Mirelih Heter La'asois.
Inoculation.
Fantastic.
Inoculation.
Apparently, it is not an English word. Okay? So this is in German. It is that you're allowed to do an inoculation. Shall pocken. What's pocken?
Ah.
The pox, right? So we're talking about small pox. Af she'echot me'elef meis al yedai inoculation. So now he's talking post-Jenner, okay, because look at the years. He was born in 1782 and lived to the 1860s. And in fact, in his Pirush and Pirkei Avos, he references Jenner. Just fascinating. Chaviv Adam Shani Rabbi Tzelem, the role of non-Jews in the world. Fascinating essay he has there. So he is clearly post-Jenner. But nonetheless, post-Jenner, there's still a danger. It's not 0.5 to 2%, but it's 1 in 1,000is the numbers that he's putting it at. So he says, I'll call upon him. She'im yishavu boi ha-pokan ha-tivim. Let's say a person were to contract natural smallpox, ha-sakana krova yoser, it is clearly a much more dangerous and proximate danger. V'lochein roshay lachnis es atzmoi v'sakona rochoko kedei latzil es atzmoi misakona krova. Very basic math. There's overt danger and there's distant danger. We'll call it in terms of statistics. The statistics are simply clearer. It is there's less chance of dying by taking the vaccine than not taking the vaccine. It's a very simple simple equation. Therefore, one has to take it. This is what the Tiferes Yisrael suggests, which should be pretty obvious. The reason why it becomes more cloudy today is because we are blessed to be living in a world where we have not witnessed rampant disease. So perhaps we sometimes think differently because we aren't aware of what outbreaks look like and epidemics look like, although we're seeing it now as measles starts. Right, we're seeing some of that already. We'll see some of the statistics in just a second. Another example, somebody who's relating to this, was a short pamphlet called Alei Terufa, which is published. If you take a look on the next page, on page 3, it was written by an individual called Matzair Avram ben Arav Shlomo. So there's a Rav who was he spent some time in Eastern Europe. He moved to London. He went back to Eastern Europe. You could read in this pamphlet. It's a very short pamphlet of 41 pages. The publication date, if you take a look at the bottom of the Sha'ar, which is the top left of the Sefer, he says it in the word Bishnas Kechastucha Hayinu Veeshmara Edus Picha. He turns it into a pasuk. The word Eshmara Shin Mem Resh Hey is the year, which is the year 1784. Okay, so this is when he published the Sefer. This is before the vaccine has been released, which was 1796, where the first experimentations were actually done. So he's talking about, he talks about how he lived in a particular city, he was the robber of a city, the idea of this earlier variolation where they would inject the smallpox fluid into people was suggested, and most of the community dismissed it because inertia, right? We don't know what this is, it's new, how do we do it? He himself, and as most of the people, ignored it. He came back later, he moved to a different city, came back, two of his children were infected and died. And so he, Rachman al-Nisan, he wrote this pamphlet as a halachic guideline to all the communities around Europe, to begging them to take note. And this is before the vaccination, before the statistics increase, to please, please vaccinate their children. And it's a very fascinating thing. He goes through the halachas, so some of which we will be able to touch upon today. You can read in his introduction, I'll paste some of the arguments that he makes over here. And you can take a look at the last paragraph is the Kibalti Olai Beneder Lidfoik Kol Share Bez Bate Amedrush Michach Meador Rat Ma Yanubozi. He says, I've taken it upon myself to knock upon all the doors of every base medrash to talk about this issue. Obviously, it's very close to his life. He wants to protect people, and people are not yet aware of this. And by the way, we should just appreciate it's easy for us to judge because we're now living in the 21st century, but it's not easy. You know, you can't just pull out a copy of the Lancet. You don't have the internet to look at things. All the information you have is simply what arrives in your shtetl and who the local gossip has talked about. So the source of information is very, very little. What he's doing is he's trying to take upon himself to expand this information source. What about today? So just statistics. One of the doctors in my shul, an immunologist, sent me this from the Department of Health in New York State. This is dated December 11th, 2018. We're on to December 16th, so this is 5 days ago. This is released by the Department of Health in New York. Just to take a look at this. This is unfortunately, it's a tremendous chilul Hashem. Look at the outbreaks that the New York State is talking about. To date, we're going in the update on the measles advisory, the second bullet point. To date, the Rockland County has identified 91 confirmed cases of measles, 71 of whom children below 18 years of age, concentrated in New Square, Spring Valley, and Muncie. New York City has identified 35 confirmed cases of measles in the communities of Williamsburg, Borough Park, Bensonhurst, and Brooklyn. These are all Jewish communities. Why? Where does it come from? It was a visitor from Israel. Okay, so in Israel, they're going through a terrible epidemic right now. It was a visitor from Israel, visited the communities, and as you can see in the statistics in the next bullet point, skipping my bullet point, 89% of these cases have a known documented measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine status. So they only know about 90% of them. Among the cases with known MMR vaccine status, 95 were unvaccinated. Right, so we need to say, all you needed was somebody to come with carrying the disease and automatically spread like wildfire because you have communities which are unvaccinated. So this is real. This is hopefully something which can be contained. We're talking about an epidemic right here, right? We're talking about this is breaking out now. We have numerous cases in the communities of all Jewish communities. New York State is not talking about Jewish communities. It's talking about New York State. It happens to be all the places occurrences are in Jewish communities because of some of the concerns which have been raised, which should be shocking to us. So let's try to appreciate this. This is why it's a hot topic right now, unfortunately. So a few questions. Just a few background for those, just by a show of hands, how many physicians in the room right now? Okay. So we have a couple of physicians in the room, but just for those who perhaps are not aware, just a few basic points to notice. Do vaccines, this is some of the questions that I just went through when I co-presented last on this topic, is there a danger for taking vaccines? The answer is yes, every medication has a side effect. So that's the way it is. Medications are potent. That's the reason they work. And every potent medication has a side effect. That's the way things work. Happens to be there's statistics about what the side effects are. So for instance, I asked this pediatrician, have you seen any side effects from vaccines? Of course, there's been people who get fevers. Some people have actually had seizures as a result of the fevers, not because of the vaccine, but as a result of the fevers. So there's basic things that happen because of vaccines. There's no question. They are improving over the last 3 decades simply because first of all, the incidence of certain diseases have gone down, but also because their vaccines are improving. Right? We're able to use less potent vaccines as the diseases diminish. What about there's a famous discussion which happens around Shabbos tables about autism. And so this is something you hear all the time, are vaccines related to autism? So in 1998, there was a paper which was released by an infamous doctor, his name was Dr. Andrew Wakefield in England, published in The Lancet, which is really one of the world's leading medical journals, and it talked about 13 of his patients where he showed there was a connection between the taking of a particular vaccine and autism. It happens to be that it was found to be that first of all, he was funded by a particular group of lawyers, and number two is that I think it was 5 of his cases were fraudulent, the symptoms had been seen beforehand. He was in fact not only was the paper retracted and many of the signatories on the paper retracted themselves as well, but he lost his medical license to practice in England and was actually asked to leave England. He went to Texas afterwards and published another paper in 2002 where after his medical license was revoked completely. Just to appreciate this, since then, in every medical journal, there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of papers which have been written showing that there is no link between the diseases that he suggested, between vaccines and these diseases. There is no paper to date with a reputable medical professional that has showed any medical linkage between vaccines, autism, or certain bowel syndromes which he suggested. The problem is that, much like the gossip in 1780, the town gossip, all you need is something to hit the internet and it becomes gospel. So everybody becomes a medical practitioner. Mm-hmm. Once they hear about something, they don't do all the necessary research, and so things start spreading about the dangers of these things. There are claims, and we'll perhaps address this later on, is that the reason why it is true that there are no credible medical journals or doctors who are talking about the dangers of vaccines, and that is because everybody's being bought off by the pharmaceutical companies. Well, just to clarify something, just to make it absolutely sure, the pharmaceutical companies are not earning money on the vaccines. That's not where their money is. And many companies are actually, in many countries, they actually subsidize vaccination. That is not where the companies are earning their money. There's no interest in that particular. There are many problems with pharmaceutical companies in general, but this is not one of the problems. Vaccination is not one of the lobbies that they're trying to win. It's not the state senators and it's not the federal government who's being brought off and all the doctors and all the medical journals. Just to put things to clarify some of the actual facts on the ground. We will address some issues. So for instance, you'll sometimes hear claims where all cases of polio in the last 2 decades in America are vaccine related, meaning caused by vaccine. The answer is yes. That's a good example of how the vaccine is working. That means to say there's no natural occurring cases, and the only things were the statistical anomalies which are happening because of polio. That's the success of a vaccine. That is the byproduct. Yes, there is a risk. So what about halacha? Do I need to keep healthy in halacha? Basic question. Answer is absolutely, 100%. Where do we know this from? So there are numerous places we learn this from. Here's the example that the Rambam brings. Rambam codifies this in halacha in Mishnah Torah. He talks about the following. There is a myth in the Torah that if you have a roof, and translation in LA, swimming pool. So if you have anything which could be dangerous in your property, you have a chiyuv, you have a responsibility to place a fence around it. We call that the mitzvah of ma'ake, of making a fence around something which is dangerous. The Rambam says the reason this is because it says, he quotes two psukim, he says, guard yourself, make guard your soul. It's interesting, the actual context of that pasuk is actually a spiritual danger, but nonetheless, when it comes to the way the Rambam interprets the halacha and the Gemara interprets it, it seems to be about guarding oneself from physical dangers. One thing which is interesting to note is how high does your premises, to, let's say let's say you have a trellis in the backyard, how high does it have to be to require a fence? This is important just in terms of working out statistics. So halacha is the rabbis tell us, Chazal tell us, that it has to be 10 tefachim, which is roughly about so high, you know, waist high. That's not an exceedingly high ledge necessarily, right? But it's interesting that the Torah still requires, and it puts in the word Ushmor nafshecha ma'od, right? You've got to be very careful, which is fascinating because the Torah doesn't deal in statistics. The Torah doesn't say, you know, when you have a 75%, or let's say a 15% danger, you know, fatality rate, that's when you need to worry. The Torah doesn't say that. But we can infer from some of the cases that we're going to deal with, how dangerous is it to fall off, let's say, you know, a waist-high ledge? Well, people can kill themselves in anything, unfortunately. There's terrible fatalities in minor accidents, but there's also times where people, you know, just they bruise themselves, they hurt themselves. Right, but nonetheless, the possibility of danger is supposed to be the notion of where there's a requirement to make a fence. The question is, how far does it go? How far is the danger? Because you can go in both directions. You see, in the vaccination camp, they'll say, well, yeah, because the dangers of the disease out there are significant enough. In the anti-vaccination camp, they'll use the same argument. They'll say, well, the dangers of the vaccination itself bring with it a certain percentage which we should be worried about. Is that something to be worried about? Is there a certain parameter on statistics where we can say beyond which halacha doesn't care about? That's the question we have to ask. So let's go a little further. What about today? Am I now take risks? Now, does Judaism allow risk taking in the first place? And the answer is, unequivocally,
yes.
Of course. Did anybody walk here this morning? I walked here this morning, happens to be. Yes, you walked here this morning. I imagine everybody else drove here. Right, well, just statistically speaking. Right, so in the recent years, I just looked at California driving statistics. In 1 million, sorry, I apologize. Every 100 million vehicle miles driven, there's a 0.92% fatality rate. Which means to say, translated into actual amount of people, 7.9 people in California, among 100,000, die per year from fatalities on the roads. Okay, so we talk about statistics. That means to say that I take a risk every single time I not only get into a car, but actually when I walk across the street, as a pedestrian even. Which means to say that we always are taking risks. So if we're supposed to guard ourselves from danger, how are we ever supposed to take risks? Like basic day-to-day rituals, basic day-to-day survival. How does that work? So the Gemara talks about this in numerous cases. And the Gemara talks about, the example we're going to talk about is we're going to learn about just a moment, is a fascinating one. It's talking about actually the need of contraception. The Gemara talks about particular women who are at a more risk of becoming pregnant. Is there allowance for contraception in the case of, for the sake of danger? The Gemara ultimately goes through an interesting debate. It's in Yevamos on Yud Beis and Beis, and finally says that the opinion which we pass in halacha is that the way the Gemara quotes in the words about six lines from the bottom says, "Min haShemayim yirachmu mishum shenemar shomer v'sa'im Hashem." That there's certain times where we simply say Hashem's going to have mercy, and Hashem will guard us. Hashem will guard the simple. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look after us. Meaning to say, there's a certain time, at certain points in our lives, we just do things because that's the way things are done. And it is true that there's a statistical danger involved in that, but nonetheless, we take that risk because that's what day-to-day life involves. But the problem is, where do you draw the line? Meaning, when do you say, this is a normative activity, and I'm allowed to take the risk? Or do I say that, no, this is something I should be concerned about, like having a ledge in my yard where I need to put a fence there to protect anybody from getting damaged? Where do you divide between the two of these? So here's an interesting thing which we all know about. We say a Berakas HaGomel going through difficult situations in life. What are the four difficult situations that we say a Berakas HaGomel on? So we go through it. Right, so there's sea travel, air travel, then we'll put those together. Right, so then there is also desert travel. Then the other two are illness and prison. Illness comes in, birth is because of a medical danger. So essentially, there's this, their acronym is Chayim, right, if you want to go through it. the four different categories for Birkas HaGomel that a person would say Birkas HaZogomel. So we're giving birth, it's a medical danger, so that would fall into the topic of Chola as an example. So the interesting thing about it is that two of those are non-elective, right? Meaning to say, when it comes to going to prison in certain countries, or when it comes to sickness, those aren't always things a person elects. But when it comes to travel, when you're going across the desert, when you're going into, when you are entering into, you're going across the desert or the sea, that's something you chose to do. And you're saying a Birkas HaGomel because it was dangerous. So how in the world are you allowed to do that if it's dangerous? You should just simply sit at home. Basic question, right? Nobody ever questions this. So it happens to be the later Akron and the later decisors in Halacha actually address this very fascinating. So for instance, the Binyan Tzion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, in Germany addresses this issue. Another example is the Shem Aryeh, Rav Aryeh Lebush Balachubar, if I'm not mistaken. So he has a set of responses where he says the following. We're not going to read the entire Shuvah because we simply don't have the time right now, but he says the following. I'm going on to the second underline, where at the very end of the line is a Aleph Vav with an apostrophe. He says, Elo Vadai, he says, after addressing this question, Dibidvorim Ka'elu Asher Heim Letzorech Ha'olam Ein Isur Klal. This is in source 8 on top of page 7. When you have something which is the way of the world, there cannot be an Isur. Meaning, if there's something which is the natural course of events, the Isur of putting oneself in danger does not exist. A normal course of events, Tiv Oy Shel Olam, he uses the word later on. Fascinating. So I mean to say, if driving to work is the natural course of one's life, one can do that. What the way the Gemara sometimes references this is, Kemet Doshu Bei Rabim, since most people do this, one's allowed to do this. Then he goes on and he says, well, there might be certain instances where there's higher proximity of danger. So for instance, as a sea travel, certainly in the time that he's talking, where they and still today, even air travel today, if we look at the statistics, there are certain higher incidences of danger. So he says, well, it may also, you need to calibrate both the level of danger and how much people are doing it, and also why you need to do it. So he would suggest that certainly the time he's talking, if you're going on a pleasure cruise and the statistics of naval accidents are such, now we may argue that it's changed since, he says if it's just for pleasure and not for work, maybe different. If it's for work, there's a necessity, and you put food on the table. If it's just to go and see the Caribbean, it might be different. Now, we deal with very different cruise ships, right? Then necessarily he's dealing with at his time, but this is an interesting thing. So maybe we'll change this. What about Black Diamond, right? Right, so I want to go skiing, and I want to go to the most dangerous slopes, and that's because of my flair for, you know, that kind of experience. How does that warrant the danger that necessary put in this? You can ask some Paiskim, I'm not going to pass him for anybody outside of my little dinner, but if you are certain Paiskim, some Paiskim are against skiing, certainly on beyond the bunny slopes. You know, why? Because we have to balance how much people do something and the need at the same time. As the Shem Aryeh says, Rebbe Chanan has a similar formulation where that means to say that basic, when you come to basic levels of what the world does, it's one is allowed to engage in this. So when it comes to vaccinations, you know, so what are the statistics? So there's it differs for every vaccination. So here's an example. Rav Schefter just spoke just a moment before right here. So we know Rav Schefter is a very unique shita of we'll call it the extent, the limitations of statistics, how far an incident you have to worry about. I'm not going to get into that right now. Take a look at source 11 for a second. This is from the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, by the DTaP vaccine. Everybody takes the DTaP vaccine, right? So what about the side effects? So let's just take a look at the side effects for a second. This is what the government produces. If you flip onto the top of page 9, there's mild problems, moderate problems, and severe problems. Severe problems are very rare. Severe allergic reactions to less than 1 out of 1 million doses, and several other severe problems have been reported after a DTaP vaccine, including long-term seizures, coma, lowered consciousness, and permanent brain damage. So yes, do vaccines incur damage? Absolutely. How much? The statistics the CDC is giving us is 1 in 1 million. Let's look at the incidence of disease for a second, fatality or disease. The next source, this is also from CDC, about diphtheria, right? So this is what the vaccine is preventing. The case of fatality rate for diphtheria has changed very little during the last 50 years. The overall case fatality rate for diphtheria is a 5 to 10% higher with higher death rates, up to 20% among persons younger than five and older than 40 years of age. Okay, so you need to say, if a disease is contracted, we're talking about a significant statistic of a death rate, And the danger, the serious danger of taking the vaccine is 1 in 1,000,000. That's an example. Now, happens to be MMR was different. MMR has improved. But none that it used to be 1 in, I believe, 40,000 for some severe side effects. But the more recent one, the last 15 years, is certainly a lot better than that. But let's think about this. So let's apply those rules over here. So yeah, you have a person. So you're now, the person is supposed to be Shemor Nashachar Ma'oit. You're supposed to guard yourself very much from any dangerous situations. At the same time, there's Shamei Pesulayim Hashem. And what people do is all right. If it's naturally done, is it naturally done not to take vaccines? No, the majority of the world takes vaccines. So we can't rely on that, right? That is, so therefore we have something which is if contracted, could be a fatality, a very significant percentage of fatality, versus, on the other hand, a danger which is a very minuscule danger, a 1 in 1,000,000 chance of a severe of severe side effects. I'm being a little dishonest here, because let's analyze this a little further. That may be true when there's an outbreak, but what you say today, well, today, does everybody need to vaccinate? Because after all, we don't have diseases which are rampant like they did then, right? This is before the diseases is around. We're not talking about where smallpox is ravaging Europe. We're talking about now in Los Angeles, 2018. Everything's fine, right? Everything's all right now. Has it changed because of that? Does prevention change from intervention in halacha? Fascinating question. So let's try to address this. There's a number of ways we can approach this. First is that there's what's called herd immunity. So every vaccination relies on what's called herd immunity, which means to say that there's a certain percentage beyond which that disease can be under control if that percentage is reached. So for instance, I believe for things like smallpox, it was 97% because it was airborne, it's very contagious. So that one's in the 80s. And if you have 80%, 90-something percent of people who are vaccinated, that's sufficient. You don't need to have everybody vaccinated, right? It's sufficient. Well, here's the problem. So everybody says, well, I don't want to be the person, right? I'm all right not being that person. Everybody else should do it. I'll be part of the 3%. And I'm not going to vaccinate. I'm not going to take this as the risks upon myself. And everybody else will vaccinate for me, and I will be safe based on the herd immunity. Which happens to be, by the way, a very narcissistic way of looking at the world. Because that means to say that I am going to ride on everybody else's taking the risks for me. That's a very narcissistic way of looking at the world. But nonetheless, avoiding that concern, let's think about this. So the problem is like this, is everybody says the same thing, and what ends up happening? What we're witnessing today in Williamsburg, in Rockland County, in Israel, is when that critical mass of people who said we're going to ride the herd immunity have now increased beyond or below the 97, the 96, whatever that immunity is for the herd immunity is for measles, and now it spreads. So you say to yourself, well, what difference does it make? I mean, you say, if everybody else is vaccinated, why is it dangerous to them? It should only be dangerous to the people who don't vaccinate. The answer is because, first of all, vaccinations are not 100% foolproof. Not every vaccination has a certain percentage that it works for. And more than that, also, there's many people who can't take vaccines. Immune disorders. People who have immune deficiencies, people who have cancer, kids who have cancer. They were the first people to contract the disease from the people who weren't vaccinating, which means to say it's affecting other people as well. Doesn't make a difference in halacha if I'm taking the risk to save somebody else. Can I take a risk to save somebody else? So let's go back to the Tiferes Yisrael. Am I allowed to put myself into this? Let's go back to page 2. And Tiferes Yisrael, who addresses this exact issue. We'll try to close because there's obviously a lot to deal with over here. Tiferes Yisrael says, and this is the third source. This is when he was talking at the times of smallpox. Third source, the fourth line in, period towards the end of the line. V'raya barura l'divrei mashakosa v'yis Yosef v'tur choshe mishpat. He quotes the Rav Yosef Karo, who says, B'shem Yerushalmi, t'chayv adam l'hachnis es atzmo b'sofek sakona k'dei l'hatzel chavero mivara sakona. You absolutely have a responsibility to put yourselves in a case of sofek, of questionable danger. If another person's in, definite danger. V'arei b'roye chavero t'vei v'nar ena muchlat. So you're walking down the river, you see somebody who's drowning in the river, and it does involve a risk because jumping into the river, there's strong currents, could affect you. It's a sofek sakana for you, but it's a varai sakana for them. Of course you jump in. When we have kids in schools who are immune to have immune deficiencies and cannot take vaccinations, we're talking about varai sakana. As we're sitting now with this outbreak of measles, and not all the kids who are affected are unvaccinated kids. There's also vaccinated kids or kids who couldn't take vaccinations necessarily, which means to say it's a liability for every school. What can schools do? Can schools, are schools allowed to demand in a policy, yes or no? Again, we're really rapidly running out of time. Most schools deal with this issue, and it's very difficult. There are different opinions as to what should be done, but I would like to just reference, being as we are running out of time, I apologize. As you can see, this is a much richer topic, which requires a lot more investigation, both on the halachic and the medical side, and the legal side, because it's fascinating. I'd like to just raise as a question, how can a school, in fact, ever have the ability to kick out kids based on a religious belief? Can they? That's a discussion and the legal background as to how that developed. Very fascinating Amish case which occurred in 1972, which relates to why Jewish schools are allowed to dictate the religious norms in their schools. Nonetheless, how does it work about school policies? So just a few recent letters that are worthwhile perusing and I'd like to draw your attention to. So first of all, the OU. I have to give credit where credit is due. Page 12, this is the Statement of Vaccinations of the OU and the Rabbinical Council of America, signed by none other than Moish Bain, who's in the room right now, about vaccinations. It's worthwhile reading the 12. The OU took a very clear stance at the same time. The OU did not recommend policy for particular institutions. So they did not say that schools have to. They recommended highly. If we move on to, on the next stage, this is obviously an issue which is not simply in East Coast. This is very much a problem in Israel. There's a terrible amount of cases in Israel dealing with measles as a result of anti-vaccination. In Source 13, this is an article in the Israel National News, which summarizes on the next page the Kol Kore in the Yeshiva World News, which is on 14. If you take a look at this Kol Kore, it's signed by Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, one of the greatest poskim of our generation, who says, if you look in the Hebrew, in the typescript below the written script, it's a mitzvah to cure disease. That is very serious. If a person is refusing to, this is a liability for other people's lives. You are putting other people on the train track by doing this. Very clear. There's no equivocating about that. This is a statement on the next page, 15, from the Nevada Rabbonim of Baltimore, released 3 weeks ago, just when I was trying to address this shiur earlier. This is from all the Rabbonim in Baltimore. Take a look at the steps. As such, in the middle of page 15, schools, playgroups, and schools should refuse entry of unvaccinated children and adults. That's a community policy. Flipping the page, Beit Shemesh. This is the doctors, a group of doctors in Beit Shemesh, also signing off with Rabbonim about the policy in Beit Shemesh, what it should be based on the measles outbreak. So page 18, Chicago Jewish community. This is a letter signed by both Rav Yonah Reis and Rav Shmuel First, the poskim of the Chicago Jewish community, both in the Haredi and modern Orthodox world, looking at the steps. Accordingly, in those steps, we would like to state the following. It is incumbent upon all members of the community to ensure that they and their children receive the measles vaccination. Even for those who are not inclined to vaccinate, this is required only based on the principle of Hamira, Sakanta, Miyusura. In addition, there's an obligation to vaccinate based on the mandate of Minishmartim Adanashra Seichem. Paragraph 3. We urge all schools, playgrounds, and schools to ban any child or adult who has not been vaccinated. This is nothing less than a matter of Pikuach Nefesh. Right? So I mean to say, it should be obvious, but unfortunately, when you read the chat rooms and you hear what people are saying on the other side and the rumors which are spread, we are hearing about things which unfortunately may have some basis in truth, but unfortunately are taken out of proportion. We as responsible Jews need, this is perhaps not even a rabbinic issue, this is a basic leadership. We as Jews need to make sure that we are not going to be on the list of the New York Department of Health's only areas in New York State, wherever it else is, because we believe in conspiracy theories. We have to take care of ourselves, and we have to be living in an age we have the ability to do so. The reason we can even have the platitude for such a discussion is because we have not witnessed epidemics. The pendulum swings back, we'll realize, and we'll vaccinate again. When it comes back, unfortunately, we all feel safe, we say there's no problem, and that's when the problem starts.